Welcome to Photodump.
This is a podcast by and for working photographers
with
Ren
and Jen.
So, this is our last episode for a little while.
Wah, wah, wah.
So, we're going to take a little break to regroup and figure out what we want to do for season two. We're going to bring on guests.
Yeah. The end. No, I think we have a bunch of ideas that we want to just expand on, and we're excited to do that and bring on some other guests that have different, who shoot different things and have just different approaches and experiences from us, to share those experiences with you all as well.
Yeah, so we're just going to take a little break to figure out how exactly to bring on guests, and we hope to be back. My goal is December.
In the interim, if you guys have ideas on episode topics, please send them our way, because I think we've exhausted a lot of the things that we felt were really top of mind, and it would be good to hear. It seems like everybody's so excited about it and wants this to keep going. So send in, you know, whatever requests you have or topics you want to hear about. I also think it would be fun. We kind of do this in the panel that you'll hear shortly, just playing the game of the scenario of what if you got this project, and
yes,
maybe we could have some guest on and they could kind of walk us through what their approach would be for budget. I think that would be fun.
That would be really fun. Yeah, we really have been loving all of the questions that everyone's been sending in, and we honestly, like, no question is inappropriate, I think. Any questions that you might have, send them on over. And anyone that has written to us so far with either feedback of saying how much they like the show or just questions in general, we appreciate it so much.
Yes,
it's just been really, really lovely.
Did you get that email over the weekend?
Yes, it was really nice. Just so nice. We love to hear from you guys, and we're super excited to be back in 2 months with, we're going to level up. We're going to level up this podcast. We're going to start bringing on guests. Yeah. And if you have any guests that you would like to nominate for us to reach out to, also, if there's anyone that you would love to hear on this show, let us know. We're just crowdsourcing as much as we can at this point.
Yeah.
Thank you guys. So we did this live panel last week. It was so much fun. I personally was just like, moved to the day after. I think I cried a little bit because I couldn't believe how many people came. It was just so amazing to see all the support and to meet you guys. So this is a live recording of that event.
Yeah, thank you guys so much.
We'll see you in a couple months.
This is not rehearsed whatsoever.
I wasn't. Perfect, that's what we love.
I didn't know I was going to be speaking today, but my name is Monica Wang. Yeah. But I am the owner of this photo studio and event space. We built it during the pandemic, so I'd worked on construction for 2 years, and then we opened March 2020. So it's been a crazy ride, but we're still here, and I'm really excited to be hosting events like this because it's the reason why I even built it, was to bring people together. So thank you guys so much for being here, and I'll have you guys take it away.
Thank you, Monica. Hi, everyone. Welcome. Thank you so much for joining us here tonight at the Reverie in Chinatown. I am so honored to be here to moderate this discussion with Ren Fuller and Jennifer Chong, the co-hosts of Photodump, a podcast made by and for working photographers.
That's our tagline.
Before we start,
yes,
I just wanted to say thank you so much to Monica for hosting us and for all of you for joining us, and to Sanzo and Can for sponsoring beverages for tonight. If you would like to order some Can, you can get 50% off using the code THEREVERIE. It has some THC in there, so you guys,
yes, it's really good.
Drink up.
I drank one unknowingly, so strap in, everybody. Thank you, Monica, so much for having us.
Drink up. There's lots of drinks.
So yeah, let's get started. I want to do a quick intro of the both of you, and then I'll hand it off, and then you guys can do a more personal introduction to our audience. But Ren here is a food and lifestyle photographer and director. Known for capturing the perfect in-between moments, Ren's impeccable lighting techniques brings a richness and vibrancy to every image she creates. Clients include Bon Appetit, Patron, and Martha Stewart Magazine. Let's welcome Ren.
I feel like you should write my bio. Yeah.
Here in the front row is a woman who wrote my bio, so sure.
Thank you. We'll
Jen. Jen is also a commercial photographer specializing in food and still life. With a background in graphic design, Jen masterfully composes each shot with a graceful and refined sensibility. Hey now. Clients include Target, American Express, and Adobe.
Woo!
Welcome, Jen.
That was very nice.
Thank you. I worked on it all night. I really did. You guys both make such a perfect and balanced duo. So I have to say, I'm really honored to be your third wheel. And I think the first, maybe, new voice on the podcast. Yeah? Okay. Yeah. I feel really lucky to be that individual.
Okay, but real quick. I think we need to intro Audrey.
Yes, we do. Because she is also a talented
photographer. Yes, she's also a very talented food, lifestyle. She shoots everything, basically.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Well, let's talk about Photo Dump. So a quick show of hands here. Who here has listened to an episode of Photo Dump? Oh, wow. So for those of you listening on the podcast, I would say about 85%, maybe 87% of people rose their hands. And who here works in the industry? Whether you are an assistant or a photographer or talent. Okay, also a good amount. I would say the majority of people here work in the industry. Any commercial photographers here? Okay, amazing. Maybe like five or so. And Monica Wang, of course, we should have mentioned she's an interior photographer that's has just an amazing body of work, so you guys should check her out as well. So good, okay, I wanted to steer the conversation to be relevant to all of you here. Photo Dump is an amazing new podcast that these two women created. And I first just hats off to the both of you for kind of peeling back the curtain and being so transparent and honest in all of these episodes. I think it's going to totally change the way that we as photographers communicate with one another. So I would love to hear from you guys. What was the origin story of Photo Dump? What was your intention? And did you seek to gain anything specific from creating it?
Well, basically, Jennifer and I talked all the time anyway about all of this stuff, and my husband overheard us one day, actually all the days. Sam, he's
where
here.
Is he? Somewhere. There Shout he is. Out Sam.
And he was like, you should record this. I bet if you guys have all these questions for each other, so does everybody else. And that was the basic origin story.
Yeah.
We had no expectations. I didn't think anyone was going to listen.
Yeah.
So I was hoping like 10 people would listen.
I don't think we had like a real, and still, I don't even know. It's just like, oh, it's fun to just talk to Ren all the time. And then we're just recording it too, because a lot of the episodes we recorded over a year ago now. So some of the, like the marketing one that just came out, we recorded a year ago.
Yeah.
So we don't think we had a real intention on this, like how we were going to, we're not trying to make money off of it, but. Anybody wants to sponsor us?
Yeah. We'll take it. But also, once we actually started doing it, my goal for this was to create something that I wish I had access to when I was starting out and had all of these questions and kind of nowhere to look to get those answers.
Yeah.
So that's basically the goal.
Yes, and for those of you who haven't listened, they cover everything from bidding to getting an agent to what the crew should look like and how they should be appropriately paid on set. So I feel like nobody has really discussed the nitty-gritty of what a production, the ideal version of a production, because most, I would say, are not ideal productions until you get
all
to a
very
certain...
unique.
Huh?
They're all very unique.
Yes, they're all special children. So rewinding, how is it that you two met? And how did you even begin the rapport with one another to chat so frankly about the industry?
We met through Slack, like everyone, how everyone meets their friends these days. We were both working for a food company, and we were leading our photography departments in separate cities. So I was in New York, Jennifer was in LA, and we Slacked every day for a year or so. And then...
She was my therapist, let's be real.
Corporate life was not for us. And we stayed in touch, and I eventually moved out to LA from New York, and she was my first real friend here. And I feel like we're at really similar points in our career, so we kind of always had the same questions for each other, like, how much would you charge for this? What usage would you have here? You know,
it's always something.
And literally, we
I
saw...
I mean, still, even now.
Yesterday, you were like, how much should I do for this cookbook?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it doesn't end just because we're commercial photographers and have agents. We still have the same, a lot of questions.
Yeah.
Yeah. That we ask each other. And I have to say that we're definitely not experts.
Right.
Because I think everybody has a very different experience. You can have the same experience like a million different ways.
Yep.
And so this is just kind of our learned knowledge that we...
I couldn't agree with that statement more. I feel like there's so many ways that you can approach one problem, and they're not necessarily all correct or incorrect. It's just by way of doing that you decide what works best for you. So I guess we should maybe define commercial photography.
I had to Google it.
I think you defined it in your first episode. Didn't you?
Well, okay, so I guess I kind of lumped commercial photography as advertising photography, but according to Google, commercial photography is anything that you make for a business. So I see, so that's what commercial photography is, like any income that you make from your photography business is technically commercial photography. And then I guess the difference is advertising photography, which I see as working with an agency with, like, you know, bit larger brands. But then there's also the in-between stuff where it's like photographer to client direct. I think basically anything that involves usage and licensing is, I kind of see that as commercial photography.
Mm-hmm. Anything to add?
I mean, I feel like there are a lot of businesses that are smaller that are still technically commercial, but mm-hmm. they don't have a commercial... commercial budget.
Right. Yeah, I feel like it's an image intended to sell an idea or a product, and that could range from even a headshot to, of course, product imagery or lifestyle imagery that captures products in very real, authentic moments of an everyday life. So it is a really broad term. And so were you guys always a commercial photographer? Did you go to school for this, or how did you come into the business?
Well, I went to school for graphic design. I worked as a designer for many years, but I always shot on the side, and I just photographed for fun, and then this one restaurant that I happened to shoot for really liked my photos, and I was just like, here, take them. I gave away all my photos, and this manager actually sent me a gift card, but it was like $500, and I was like, wow. Like, oh, he values my work. And then that's when something in my head was like, oh, maybe I can try to do this for a living. So I worked as a designer, but then I was shooting on the side. And then eventually I got the full-time position shooting, and that's when I met Ren. Yes, I forgot the question now.
How did you get into commercial photography?
Yes. So then I was shooting freelance and really just shooting a lot of small business stuff. And my dad passed away, and I took a lot of time off for when he passed away. And I was just like, after he passed away, I was like, okay, I gotta do something. I'm not getting any inquiries, or I'm getting a lot of these small jobs, and I'm like, these are not it. So I put out a promo book and started just reaching out to agencies and agents and trying to get my work out to people that I thought had bigger jobs. Bigger budgets. I was really tired of doing the $500 job for the Monpa, as great as it was like I was doing everything and I just wanted to step up my game. So that's sort of how it sparked. I think my dad's death like really like encouraged me to like, okay, I gotta do something because people aren't just gonna come to me. So I had to kickstart that a little bit. And then it's just kind of grown over the years. I started getting, you know, a few inquiries that were just bigger. Like they clearly had bigger budgets and I was like, I'm not winning them, but I don't really know why. And so it's just like, kept working at that.
And I went to film school for film and television, and I worked in post-production for a few years after college and just really hated what I was doing, but knew I wanted to do something creative. And so I tried a bunch of different things. I taught a game design class for 8-year-olds, kind of random. I helped a casting director friend as like a casting associate. I just tried a bunch
of
different things.
Oh my God, I did that too.
Oh my gosh.
That's weird.
It was, I just had to cruise Craigslist and find truckers that wanted to be in a commercial. A lot of people didn't answer my calls. And photography was always something that was a really fun hobby. And so I was like, oh, I should try to see what life as a photographer could be like. So I was living in San Francisco at the time, reached out to a few photographers, worked in their studios for a little while, and just it felt similar to working on a film set, but more manageable as far as hours, just like the length of the projects were much better. On film shoots, you could be on set for a month straight, and you're just exhausted, whereas here maybe you're exhausted for 5 days and then you have a breather. Yeah. So it just felt like a more manageable career. And so I started kind of just experimenting with that. And there was a point where I was still trying to get post-production work, but also trying to get studio work. And I felt like I just wasn't really excelling in either direction. And so I kind of just had to pick one. Mm-hmm. And I had a really bad job interview experience for a post-production manager that I was like heartbroken over. And I was like, screw film. I'm going photography. And so I kind of just made a choice and just went for it. And then just started shooting whatever I could get my hands on and eventually got this full-time job where I met Jennifer, which gave me the confidence to just shoot food. Mm-hmm. And it kind of just all went from there. And then eventually, actually, I remember in film school, there was always this kind of like hate against commercial work. Everyone's like, if you move to LA, you're gonna sell out and do commercial work. And if you stay in New York, you're gonna be indie and just make no money. And so eventually, for a really long time, I was like, I don't wanna sell out. I just wanna do like really cool stuff and I don't wanna work for commercials. Cause also in post-production, I was working at a commercial post house and we were just making ads for people to buy products. And it was like, this is whatever. Yeah, but then eventually I was like, wait, I actually really wanna make a living. So we moved to LA and now I work in the commercial world.
Okay,
and I love it.
Oh, good. That's good to hear. That's a great segue into making a living, actually. So, Jen, you kind of spoke briefly about leveling up from these smaller mom and pop gigs to where you are now, which obviously requires more resources, bigger budgets, bigger teams. So I kind of want to give the lay of the land of like what a commercial photography set looks like behind the scenes. Like what is beyond actually clicking the image? Who do you have on set with you? Who are the non-negotiables? What resources are the non-negotiables?
David is a non-negotiable.
David's a non-negotiable. He's our assistant. That's a go-to. Well, I think for me, a lot of my sets are with food. So food stylists and prop stylists, I think, are always non-negotiables. At the bare minimum, that's at least what I need, and David, and an assistant. But I mean, I think on a big commercial job, you have multiple assistants, your team, so your prop stylist, food stylist, wardrobe stylist, all the stylists have assistants. There's a digitech, so somebody's on the monitor and helping you check focus and name files and all that nitty-gritty stuff. There's a producer. That's something that you don't get on a small job. You are usually the everything. So that's really nice. They just help handle all the jobs. I'm sure I'm missing a lot more people.
There's a lot, yeah.
It's like thanking people at the Oscars. Yes. Someone's bound to be left off, but it's okay. We can edit later.
There's the set dogs. They're always great too. But I think non-negotiables, definitely a first assistant at the bare minimum, because it's always great to work with someone that's really great at lighting, who you can leave on their own to set up while you deal with a client. But also, just on like a very basic level, it's really hard to schlep all your gear. And so it's just, you really need the bodies to move all of the equipment, to set everything up. You can't do everything yourself and also interact with the client, which is really your main job on set. You're creating images, but you're also making the client happy. And so you just really need the team behind you to be able to make that happen. I think also producers at this point are pretty non-negotiable.
Yeah. And I feel like one of the things I love most about Photodump is how in detail you speak about budgets and actual numbers. Like when I've attended panels or heard other photographers speak, there are gatekeepers there, and you never are really privy to the actual Excel sheet. And you guys have gone through rates on your podcast, which I really appreciate, because that should be the lowest common denominator for people working in this field. Otherwise, you'll lowball yourself. So can we get into some of those numbers? Would that be all right?
Yes.
No? Should we not?
No,
else,
yes. I actually love talking about
rates. But I also feel like it's so unique. Like, every job is so unique. And to say that, I mean, I feel like there's not always a number across the board. And, you know, I was telling Joe that I was on a small set today. Like, just because I work on big stuff doesn't mean I always do big stuff. You know, I was on a pretty small set today. It was me, David, an assistant, and then I had a prop stylist. And we didn't have a producer on this job. But we can talk about numbers.
Yeah, I mean, it's not always the ideal situation. And I don't think anyone can expect that out of this business. I think ultimately we love what we do. So even if the numbers aren't there and the project is enticing enough, that's enough of a motivation incentive to take on the job, just to keep making. But let's talk ideals.
Putting us on the spot.
Yeah.
Is this on the list?
Is that okay? I sent you the questions. So if let's just talk like ideal, typical food tabletop day. And let's just say you have everyone that you could possibly want or need on set. Like, can we do like a broad stroke, give or take $15,000, what a tabletop production should cost?
Well, I think at the bare minimum.
Where is it going to go?
Great question. Where is it going to go? All media? 3 years? Okay. Digital then? How about?
Are we talking about let's the start whole with production? Or are we just talking about a photographer?
Well, why don't we talk about like the expenses of a production, and let's keep usage separate for now. How about that?
Yeah.
Okay. Fair.
I feel like at a bare minimum, 25.
Yeah. Bear.
Baby bear.
Yeah.
Okay. So
my agents are here looking at me saying I should not say that number.
Okay, but that's
bare
minimum. Minimum.
That's having we're talking about as a commercial, right? Is what we're
just
saying.
No, I think like any food job.
Not saying
I'm just
usage.
Saying like like your ideal.
Oh, ideal.
Budget.
Well, oh,
okay,
ideal
well,
budget.
Okay,
budget
so we have different. The low end. We
I
have
like
the low
saying,
end.
Saying like the bare minimum that somebody comes to me and like, what can I do? And I'm like,
yes.
If I
won't leave my bed for less than $25,000
for the production.
For the production, yeah, at least. And then I would say like, let's talk about who that includes. Maybe you have a tech, maybe one assistant.
I feel like
25 doesn't include
a tech.
Yeah. Sorry.
No.
No digital IQ on that one.
You don't get to see your images until you go home. Okay.
Bring your own equipment.
Dropbox.
Tether yourself. Okay. Yeah, yes. $25,000 is tether yourself, one assistant, two stylists and their crew, maybe?
Yeah.
Studio?
Yeah. I mean, stylist, also like a studio is expensive.
studios
aren't, takes a big chunk of our money.
Yeah.
Just kidding. Studios are expensive.
Yeah.
And then props. I think also something to know is like a prop stylist does not come with props. Something to all know for everybody. There are lots of places you can rent props from.
Shout out.
And even if they own their own props, they are renting them from themselves.
Yes.
Correct. Yes.
That is something I feel like, you know, I wasn't really sure when I first started. I was like, how does it work? Do they, you know, so that's also something to factor into your budgets. You know, it's not just that person's day rate. It's, well, what are you shooting? And do you need a piece of furniture or do you need a fork? Like, a fork is only going to be $3, but a furniture might be $300, you know? So that's changes.
But then you bring the fork and they're like, well, do you have other options? So you have to bring like 20 forks.
20 forks, right. Exactly. So, I mean, I think that's something, you know, the food costs and the prop costs are completely outside of people's rates. Mm-hmm. So yeah. It just adds up really quickly. Some people aren't that expensive, but then you just add this line item and this line item, and you're like, wow, that's $50,000.
Yeah.
I mean, I just did a shoot recently where I think the entire production for a one-day shoot was like something like 65, 70K, and it was tight.
Yeah.
Like, we were struggling to get everything that we needed.
Did you have any talent in that budget?
No talent.
No talent.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there you go. And that wasn't even ideal.
It could have been better.
And that was that in had nothing to do with usage?
Usage was part of it too.
But okay.
It was just, yeah. I mean, the bulk of it went to production, and production, we had to, I mean, I'm not going to go into the details, but we had to cut certain things.
Please go into the details.
It's not cool.
Tell us. That's, we're here for the juicy stuff.
There was very little wiggle room for overages, so then we had to sacrifice certain things to get the things that we needed.
Yeah.
So that was a tight budget, which sounds big.
Ideally, do we want to go through... I mean, are you guys interested in actual rates? Because I want to appeal to... Yeah, I see a lot of nods of heads. Some yes, some no.
But like, what rates are we talking about?
I mean, just like standard stylist rates, because, I mean... I guess you can also just listen to
just
one episode of the podcast. But for those of us who haven't listened, I just feel like as an industry, we do need to discuss that. Like, when I was first starting out, I didn't have other photographers to cross-check what I should be charging. So it was just a gauge in my mind. I had to work backwards from what I needed to buy the things that I needed to buy, wanted to buy, and then like break down my hourly from there. Or I also had a full-time job, so I based it on what the salary was, like on an hourly. But other than that, I didn't really have anyone telling me like, don't go out for less than X amount. You know, even if it's a mom and pop, because I think you guys mentioned on the podcast, at the end of the day, you're creating an image that earns them money. There's an ROI on what you are providing them. So I feel like you have to factor that in. Tell me.
I just listened to something.
Yes.
The future guy. Yeah. He was talking about the clients that do come to you that low budget you tell them, it's like, I'm not going to quote this correctly, but basically it's like, I'll shoot it for free, but I take 50% of your profits.
Oh.
So like, how does that sound? I'll do all the production. Oh. I don't think it was like a design job, because
I think
he's more of a designer, but I'm like, oh, that's like a really good sell. I mean, obviously it's an investment in yourself too, right? That they have to sell some X amount of stuff, but... you made me think of that. Like for the people that don't have, you know, even the mom and pas, they're using your photography. And I've even worked for some mom and pas, and they're like, it was really hard for them to, I think I charged them like $1,500. This was way back in the day. And I did everything myself. And he was like, wow, like, I'll easily spend, after we did the first shoot, he's like, I'll easily spend $5,000 because it paid for itself. Like, the shoot paid for itself very quickly after he had those photos.
I think it's easier to kind of figure out rates once you start working with usage, because you're probably working with an agent who's kind of guiding you in that direction. And usage really varies. I've had usage that's been like 3,500 all the way up to like 25 a day.
Right.
For usage. So usage really, really varies based on how long it's being used, where it's being used. Is it a full copyright buyout? Is it on a tiny square on social, even though I know that's like the biggest marketing platform now.
Yeah.
Just like all of that stuff, it really varies. But I think when you're first starting out and coming up with rates, it's kind of like what you said. I mean, that's how I picked my rate. I was just like, okay, how much do I need to make a month? Divide that by four. That's how much I need to make a week.
Correct.
And then divide that by five.
Yeah, exactly.
Same. And then maybe like up it a little bit because you're not working 5 days a week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that leads me to, I read somewhere that like 55,000 images are taken every second worldwide. And that makes 4.7 billion images captured a day. So the value of a single image has just diminished greatly. Back in the day when you were a film photographer, you had all the power. You were the only person who saw what image was being captured, and then everyone had to wait diligently and patiently for that film to be developed. And now, with the flood of content, I guess, I don't know, it's like to justify that image is it's an uphill battle, I think, because there's an image and there's like the craft of creating an image, and then there's content, and that's quality over quantity. So how do you guys kind of work through that balancing act in your own mind of like creating more or creating good?
I mean, I prefer to create good, but I just feel like the shot list that we've been getting is just, they're getting so jam-packed. That I was just talking with my agent this morning, and we got a deck that it was a 3-day shoot, and the shot list was a clear, like easily a 5-day shoot, if not more. But it's a great client, it's a huge agency. I'm sure the budget is gonna be great. And so it's like, how do you give them everything that they want in the 3 days, knowing that it's gonna be insane and you're probably not gonna have the time to do the best job you can because you can't do it in that time, but you have to because someone else will.
Right.
So I don't know, I don't know how to answer that question. It's actually a really hard one.
I promise you no hard questions, but I sorry, I
think
it's
really hard too, because I think now going back to content, everybody needs so much. So what I really cannot stand is that when I'm on a shoot, I always like to frame the shot for whatever usage it is going to be. But now it's like, I need this image to work for a homepage, which is wide, an Instagram story, which is long and narrow. Like, it's so hard for a stylist to like style that shot and for a photographer to light that and look good in every scenario. So I think that's really hard. I mean, I think at the end of the day, we all want to be making really good, beautiful shots. And I try to tell people that all the time. It's like, at the end of the day, you want one image that's going to like knock people's socks off and not 100 images that are just like, oh, it's fine.
Yeah.
So just shoot for a square.
Yes.
That's
everyone
my solution.
Everyone change your formats to square.
Yeah. Yeah, and the lifespan of an image, it's not just, I mean, the value is being determined by so many factors. It's because quantity is so important now, and then also just the lifespan of that image, it's going to just, if it is mainly purpose for social, it's going to be one square then buried eventually in the next couple days. So
I personally do not shoot for social because I am not interested in shooting for someone that's going to look at my image for 0.2 seconds. So I'm not prioritizing social when I'm doing my personal photography, work photography. I like to do jobs that are meant for people to see them on pages, magazines, whatever, just someone that's not going to just like scroll through something.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I would agree with that. I also feel like I think it's just in general, a lot of brands that want social content, they want a million images. And I actually think they don't really care if it's
good or
they
not.
Want 10 images. They don't want one great image for a lot of social. I mean, I think it's just with Instagram and algorithms and all that great stuff. It's just like it's more of a game. It's a different kind of game. You know,
it's a different kind of game for sure. But is it now becoming more and more important to factor it in? I mean, is that where our industry is eventually going, because it's such a powerful touch point for brands?
I'm trying not to think about it.
Oh, okay. Let's just avoid it altogether. Let's move on.
I don't know.
I
feel like some people are just really, really good at social.
Yeah.
And I'm just not interested in it enough to like do all of those algorithm related things. Like at one point, someone was like, we got to start making reels now. And then, and then my husband was like, but they're going to change it in like 6 months. Are you really going to learn how to make reels and then it's going to be something else in 6 months? Yeah. And you're like, okay, yeah, no, I'm not.
Yeah. So. I mean, who knows what's going to be the next version of this and how new technology is going to impact our craft. Like I have no idea and feel overwhelmed with the question as well, but I do think it's inevitably headed that way, and it's becoming the most powerful way of brands connecting with their customers. And in commercial photography, that's the goal. What is the most compelling way to impact and influence your customer?
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. We'll hold hands through it and see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, I think with all new technology.
I'm not saying like, I'm not like anti-evolving. I mean, like, for example, with, you know, video, like motion and stuff, that was something that was like clearly happening that was in much more demand. And it's like, yes, you evolve as a photographer and as a business owner. You're just like, okay, how do I incorporate this into my approach? So there's definitely like natural ways to evolve, but I just think it's kind of like picking and choosing what you want to focus on, what'll actually make you a better photographer, business owner, whatever it is.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. So with this flood of content, one of my favorite episodes of your podcast, Photo Dump, was Copycats. And Ren and Jen discuss a few instances where, I mean, in your situation, Ren, exactly lifted your composition lighting, even down to the props that you featured. So yeah, I guess let's talk a little bit about originality and how to still set yourself apart from the pack when, like, sometimes I feel like I'm absorbing things I'm not intentionally trying to, and it influences like how I see images and what I go for, but I'm not seeking it. So how have you addressed that, and how have you tried to stay away from it yourself?
No hard questions. That's a great question. I don't know. I think it's also really hard. I think we talk about this on the episode because we get a lot of, you know, mood boards and storyboards, and some clients will draw everything out and you're like, great. And hopefully they drew it out, not from anything, but other times they have an image that they want and they're trying to replicate that. I think they're also hiring you for your opinion and like your thought process too. So even though they come to you with something, I think there's always room for you to put in your creative input.
Right.
So I think it's just trying to talk through that whenever, even on a like creative call, it's like, oh, I think this is cool, but what if we did this too? If that is something you feel like, oh, everyone has done this before, but I mean, there's obviously like trends, so that's something unavoidable, I guess. I don't know, what do you think, Brenda?
Well, I think also as far as setting yourself apart from people, because everything that Jennifer said is 100% accurate. Like, you get these decks and there's these trends and you're hired to do a certain thing. But as far as staying true to your own creativity and style, actually there's things that I try not to do, and that's to like take literally other people's success and what's working for them. I try really hard not to fixate on it, which is hard to do when you're getting these decks with images that you know the photographer that shot that's probably going to get the job. And it's trying to not let that kind of get in your head and still do the work that you want to do. And I'm not saying don't be inspired by it, but I think it's kind of just I try really hard not to let the chatter kind of take out, like lead me in my creative process. It's very hard to do, but that's what I try to do.
I agree with that wholeheartedly. I feel like in the ideal world, your clients are coming to you for your expertise. And in a relationship where you've built a very trusting rapport with them, they want you to speak up because it's on behalf of their brand. It's on behalf of their brand to be original, and it's on behalf of their brand to stand out from the crowd. So that conversation, I've definitely been a part of it in the past, like, we need to do something different than what you're proposing because all your competitors are doing it and you don't want to blend in with what they're doing. You want to stand out. So I do think it's up to the creative. Don't be shy. Make sure your voice is heard in a situation where you see a mood board and a client wants you to mimic and lift exactly what they're presenting. And hopefully they'll be receptive to that. Yeah. Okay. What else do we have? I told you beforehand, okay? I said, I want to know about a horror story on set. I want to hear about, or a client horror story or a production horror story. I just want to know, like...
I mean, it's not going to be, like, that juicy, but I've literally had creative direction change on me in the middle of a shoot.
I feel like that's normal. Yeah. I feel like that's every shoot.
No, that's not that normal.
Not if it's like a drastic pivot.
Yeah.
Wow.
Like a drastic, or I mean, to me, it felt drastic. It was a stills in motion shoot that was stills priority, and a lot of the setup was based around like shooting stills, and then they pivoted to motion, and it's like, oh. Okay, we gotta do it like very differently.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, lighting, everything. Yeah, that.
I mean, we were luckily already lighting for motion, but just like the direct, you know, like directing had to change. Yeah. It was one of those things where the client was just getting really excited and coming up with all of these ideas, and the agency was like letting them have these ideas on the spot. And it was just
free flow.
Like, that's what the whole pre-production is for.
How did you handle that?
I kind of had to let go of it. I was doing the shoot with my husband, and he gave me a pep talk, and he's like, we're just, this is a job at this point. Like, we just have to kind of get through it, and it just I let go of having any expectations for it. I was like, okay, we're just gonna finish it, and we're gonna do the best that we can.
Were you happy with the end product?
It was fine.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. Where was the client?
They were happy. Okay. They were happy, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's good.
I mean, I feel like I'm never fully satisfied. I feel like I can always do a better job, but, mm-hmm. or I always want to do something that there's just not enough time or budget to do. Yeah.
I saw this question, and I was, like, thinking about it. And not to say that nothing horrible has ever happened, but I feel like it's one of those things where, like, it's nothing been so bad where, like, the client walked away, or like we didn't get a good photo, or just like we have to shoot 20 shots today and we don't have time. It's more of like that. I can't think of anything like a disastrous.
Oh, I heard something yesterday on set. Someone was like, I just moved to LA and I showed up on a shoot and the first assistant called out sick and the second assistant came an hour late. And I was like, oh, that's never happened to me before, but. Would have sucked.
That's terrible. That is terrifying.
I had an assistant who accidentally double booked himself.
Oh, David, you are getting thrown under.
Sorry, David. I just have to give you some shit. And then my digi got COVID.
Well, I think that's the thing.
But I mean,
that's
like, you know, you just deal with it, and then you like.
Yeah.
It's not the worst that could happen. I feel like.
Scrambles. I feel like in the last couple of years, that's just, you just expect it. Like, people will fall off. Talent, I mean, just random.
There's, like, things happen that are totally out of your control, and there's only so much you can do about it. So I think it's, like, in those situations, you should be like, okay, we're going to do this without X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
Well, on that note, are there any notable mistakes you can share that you feel you've made that our audience could learn from?
My very first job shooting was product photography for a glass blower. I'm sure they will never hear this episode. And I was like, yeah, I'll totally shoot your product, because I had shot some product for like a candy store. So I was like, I can do product photography on white. And then I got there, and he put up his beautiful glass-blown vases. And then I took a photo, and I was like, oh, my God, I have no idea how to light glass, like, at all.
It's a round, reflective object. Terrifying.
And I was like, yeah, I just need a few more minutes to set up. And he left the room, and I, like, Googled. I was like, how to light glass. So that was scary. But I figured it out. He was happy.
Okay. Yeah. So do your research, right, before showing up to set.
Do your research. I mean, I still Google things, too.
It's why it's there.
On set?
No, I mean, I might ask somebody else to help me Google that, but things that we would recommend.
Oh, or mistakes that you've made that you would share.
Okay, go.
Okay, I was shooting it was a celebrity shoot, and it was a stills in motion combo again, and we were tag teaming, and so the motion would go, and then I would wait, and then I would shoot, and you know, vice versa. And so then I jumped in to do my action or whatever, and then I went to go dump the card, and I was like, oh, I didn't shoot to card. Because we were like going back and forth between tethering, and I just forgot to put a card in.
God, that's horrible.
That is the horror story. Oh, my heart just sank.
It totally worked out. So then the motion did their thing, because we were just like jumping back and forth. And I came back and I was like, that looked so good on the last one. Can I get a few more? And she was like, yeah. And so I just got it.
That is a pro tip. I need to repeat that. If you believe you have shot to card and there is not, the card is non-existent, you go to the talent and you say, that was so amazing, I just want you to do it one more time.
Well, you need to all change your camera so that you cannot shoot without a card.
Yeah. Yes, which I did after that.
Okay. So
that's pro tip number one. Pro tip number two, back up all your work. Also back it up somewhere else.
Yes.
Not just on a drive where, I mean, I have this like horror that like, there's going to be a fire and then like all my drives go away. Like, what do you do? I mean, I don't have a great system. We should talk about this if everybody has a great system. Okay. We should talk about that.
I mean,
I have like a NAS drive that I like back up everything to. And then I have like a smaller drive that I keep next to my computer. So, I mean, they're technically in the same area. I mean, before I would be crazy and I would like take one to an office that I used to work out. So there was two separate drives. But I mean, I do have a backup system that backs up, and then I do save some high res to Dropbox or like a Google Drive. My whole library is still on the NAS in my home.
Tell anyone where it is.
I mean, nobody's gonna come get it. I mean, I would love to find like a great affordable cloud solution. If anybody has any tips. All right, Darnell's gonna be on our podcast in a future episode to talk about archiving your work.
Backing up. Okay.
No comment. I agree.
Okay. So on the flip side, I want to also hear about any projects that have been like your dream production that you just found to be so fulfilling and love the product, the end product, your imagery.
Cookbooks.
Yeah, probably cookbooks.
Yeah. But those are not commercial jobs, I feel like.
Any photography job, that's fine.
Yeah, I shot a cookbook in Mexico last year, and we spent like 2.5 weeks out there with just such a good team of people. And we made, I think, really beautiful work, and everyone genuinely enjoyed spending like 16 hours a day together. We took our days off together. We did everything together, and everyone was just so proud of the product when it was finished. And the author, on top of that, just really appreciated the team so much and just really kind of kept us part of that celebration after. And so I think that was probably like a one-in-a-lifetime experience where it's just, I just had such a good time. But it was also really hard work. And I came back from that shoot, and everyone was like, how was your vacation? I was like, I just worked like 100 hours.
Yeah.
I'm really tired, but it was great.
Yeah.
That was a really good one.
Yeah, I mean, I think just cookbooks are more of a labor of love, and you get really close to your team, and it's just fun. And I feel like usually there's not someone standing there telling you exactly what to do and where to place things, and there's also not a product you have to put in the shot, so
yeah, you can really get like creative.
You get more creative on those shots. Mm-hmm.
I think there's like different levers that you can pull when you consider different projects. Some of it is a pure labor of love. You're not doing it for the money. You're doing it because you love the medium and that team. I think that's the best feeling in the world, is creating that family on set, and everyone's goal is the exact same thing for 10, 12 hours, and then you like
leave. And everyone's like, we just made that nothing, like, into something. And that feeling is really kind of indescribable.
Agreed.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like I'm at my quick fire section.
Okay.
Dun, dun, dun. There's a Q&A after this, too. So if you guys want to start pondering, feel free to ponder some questions. Do you have any pregame rituals before production? This is a Jessica Spearman question. Shout out.
Throw up.
Cry.
Vomit for 3 minutes.
I was literally going to say, have a really bad night of sleep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like the day before the first day of any shoot, I just have the worst night of sleep.
Yeah. I think it's still really nerve-wracking, I think, to shoot. Every job, it's always like, even if it's something I know I can do really well or something I'm comfortable with, it's just always nervousness.
What single image are you most proud of?
I actually did a test shoot of just like citrus that I really like.
I love that.
I feel like I just always, when someone asks me like, what do I want to use for like a cover shot or something, I always think of this citrus shot. But I actually did everything by myself.
Oh, that's the best. I love that.
Mine is actually also from a test shoot. I did a beverage test shoot with some lady friends, and I love so much this one specific image that we created, and now I actually see it in decks sometimes. So I'm like, ooh, yay.
Maybe you guys can add that to
the
section on your podcast so people can link and see these images that you speak of. Best advice you've ever gotten about the industry?
Keep showing up. I don't know.
Keep making work. Keep,
yeah, I think.
Keep making.
I think that it's like, just keep shooting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Agree with that. Worst advice you've ever received?
I don't think I've ever received this as advice, but don't charge $150 for an image.
Yes.
That's my advice to you. Yeah. Don't ever charge $150 for an image.
I agree.
Worst advice? I don't think I have a worst advice.
I feel like we're just surrounded by people that give us really great advice.
Oh, yeah. Good. Ideal.
Yeah.
And you guys will continue passing that along. So
we hope so. Yeah.
Yeah, keep tuning in. And my last question for you guys, and I'm going to give a little nod to my favorite podcast, How I Built This with Guy Raz. So how much of your success do you attribute to luck, and how much do you attribute to hard work?
I think I've worked really hard, but I also think I got some really lucky, just like happenstance opportunities. But I think that luck with my hard work has led me to where I am. I feel like there was a few luck things and I'm like, ooh, I got this, and now let me work really hard to take this to the next level.
Yeah.
That's what I think.
I love that.
Yeah. Yes, I agree. I think I would probably say like 75% really hard work, 25% luck. There was some quote that was like, success is when hard work meets luck or something like that.
When
what is it?
Preparation meets opportunity.
Preparation. Yeah, something like that. And I feel like it's exactly what Jennifer said. It's like you could get really lucky and meet someone that's just like, we have this project, but then if you have the hard work to back it up, that's what really makes it happen.
Oh, amazing. A round of applause for our panelists tonight. I would love to open up the floor to some Q&A here in the front row.
It's actually a two-part question, if you don't mind me asking. The first one I want to know is, you know, you guys actually work on a commercial base pretty frequently, and I wanted to know, when you're in that, like, how do you deal with your creative dry spells? Like, when you're having moments where you're just like, okay, I know I have this deck, I have to do this, and I have to come correct with shooting this project, but nothing is there. It's a blank canvas, and you can't really, like, you don't feel like you could perform until the day of the shoot. How do you manage those moments of your creative dry spells?
I don't know if I've had a creative dry spell on set, but after creatively draining shoots, I feel like I need to take a break and actually do something that's not photography related to re-inspire me. And then also test shoots. I think that's like the biggest thing, is to get together with stylists that you either have wanted to work with or friends that you really like working with, and just creating images that are not told to you by like anyone who you don't agree with creatively.
Test shoots are the best.
They're the
best. I would, if someone could pay me
I guess they can't pay me to test shoot because then it wouldn't be a test shoot.
Well, and I guess that's like part of my second question too, is like with test shoots, usually when you're testing, especially since you both have agents, they're telling you to test for particular clients that you're wanting to aspire to work for. How do you take that time to actually create personal work that is dynamic for you and that actually like holds a legacy to the kind of work that you create? We all create things for these commercial clients or for people to get work, but ultimately, as artists and as photographers, we do want to create work that stands the test of time, at least for ourselves. So how do you operate in that space as well?
I feel like we talked about this on test shoots. We were talking about avoiding making mood boards for our tests so that if our agent's like, we need some coffee content, I try not to look at other coffee content.
Yeah.
I just kind of want to make something that comes to me with my stylist.
I think there's part where I'm trying to create work that involves a product or for the commercial client, but in a way that I want it to be seen, or like that we want someone to hire us to shoot that way. So then I think on the flip side too, there's also just like travel photography that I do for fun when I used to travel, whenever that was. So long ago, but that I feel like is also kind of different and like not commercially at all. But I feel like also you do some like really creative. Darnell is also a photographer and he has great work and he just had a show at Santa Monica. But I feel like I don't do as much test shoots that are, I guess, just artistically driven so much. I feel like some of it's like artistically driven, but with a product that I want X client to like look at and be like, "Ooh, I love what she did. I want to hire her and her team to create this for our brand," kind of thing. Is that?
No, yeah, you answered it.
Any other questions?
Hi there.
Oh, you should introduce yourselves.
Oh, yes. Hi everyone. I'm Marion. I'm the manager of Plate and Patina in Burbank. I know there's a lot of like prop house type of people here.
Yay.
So not exactly like prop house specific, but more so when you guys are looking for more connections of like people to work with, maybe prop stylists you haven't worked with before, food stylists, maybe your like go-to isn't available for a certain shoot. What resources do you guys use to find new people to work with? Or is it all just like word of mouth? Oh, so-and-so worked with so-and-so. Like, how do you find new people? And how do you find people who are maybe newer to the scene to like start assisting you or like to recommend to other people? How do you make those connects? That's a
very good and kind of hard question.
I mean, I think it's a combination of things. I feel like for both Red and I think we, after we've exhausted our internal like head roster, we ask each other.
Yes.
I mean, I think Audrey actually has asked me before too, where, you know, because I think there's always maybe someone great that you've seen their work, but you don't know if they've ever worked with anybody. Like, it's always great to get a personal recommendation, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Which is hard, I know, if you're like starting off.
This is actually what I really love social media for, is I bookmark stylist work that I come across all the time. And so if I get a deck, usually someone will jump to my head of like, oh, this person would be perfect for this style. Or I'll go to my bookmarks and be like, oh, who do I know in New York that would fit really well? Or like, who have I been wanting to work with in LA that is just not at like the forefront of my mind? So I utilize bookmarks for that, but also first I'll ask Jennifer.
Yeah. A lot of like personal recommendations, just asking your agent or friends, even if they've like, even that's the same goes for assistants. You know, like I have a group of assistants that I've worked with and I have a long list of assistants that have reached out to me, but I have zero connection with them. So it's a little, they might be amazing, but like I don't have any connection with them, so it's a little bit harder.
The shorthand isn't there that you've developed, and that takes so much time.
Yeah, and sometimes it's luck. Like I had a Digitech reach out to me recently that was new to LA, and he was like, "If you ever need a Digitech," and I was like, "Oh man, I mean, I work with like four all the time that I really like. I probably won't," but I was like, "Well, send me your, you know, rate and equipment and stuff." And he ended up having a piece of gear that I really needed for a specific shoot that I could rent directly from him that he knew how to operate. And so that was great because I had his information, I looked at it, and then I remembered him when that job came up.
Yeah.
So I think it never hurts to reach out, even if people have their regular go-to people, there's things always come up. Opportunities always come up, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I think too, if you're assisting and you're trying to get more work with other photographers, it's like, if your lead stylist that you work with all the time, you can always ask them to like vouch for you. You know, I think I've had assistant stylists reach out to me because their lead that they always work with is like, she's really good. Like, she needs to be shooting more, or, you know, she's a really great stylist. Like, you should try to work with her or test shoot with her. So I think if you're just starting off and you're like trying to figure out how to like break that line in between, I think that's always a great way. If you're,
yeah, I agree.
Homie will vouch for you.
I'm Kelsey. I'm a lifestyle and celebrity portrait photographer. And I had a question more about leveling up and closing deals. So I've had a lot of meetings, like first meetings with people or even second meetings with people. And how would you go about trying to close that deal with your ideal clients?
Cross my fingers. No, I'm kidding. I think there's only so much that you can do at a certain point. Like, you have your meetings, and if they go really well, obviously send up a follow-up, schedule more meetings. But you can't, there's at least like the jobs that I work on, I can't really like secure something from a meeting. Like, I just have to be awarded the job. And if I'm not awarded the job, then I just try to keep in touch here and there throughout the year. Definitely update them with work that I'm really excited about. If they follow you on Instagram, then I follow them back, and then you can engage a little bit there, but never anything, nothing like too intense. Keep it casual. But I think it's just try to put my best foot forward, and if it doesn't work out, I try to look at it as not like, that's it, the opportunity is done. It's just, you can keep trying.
Yeah. I mean, I think exactly what Ren said, but I also feel like it is sort of, maybe they love your work and just for this specific shoot, they don't think you're the right fit for it. So it's also just like reminding people of who you are at the right time. I feel like a lot of this is like being at the right place and reminding them at the right time.
That's a really good point.
Definitely.
Yeah, because a lot of people just forget. They're like, oh, we remember you, but you're not on their first top radar sometimes. Mm-hmm. So.
And then retaining a client once you've landed them. And I think that, I mean, at the end of the day, we are creating beautiful images, hopefully, but there's a whole customer service aspect of what we do that keeps the same people coming back, because obviously there are many people they could be hiring to take images, but I think that's like a secret weapon, is to make sure that that client feels comfortable with you, that you guys have this communication that works for both parties. And I feel like that's kind of that the building, you know, on one another that keeps that client.
I mean, I would also add, I just thought, I mean, I'm not sure like at what point you are with this client, but like if you haven't, maybe if you really want this client, if you've done a test shoot that would be really on the nose to them, you know,
yeah,
that would be
good
too to share. I think especially with food, sometimes if a client has never seen fried chicken in your book, they're like, she can't shoot fried chicken. So it's just, sometimes it's just like showing them that you can do the one thing that they want.
That's true.
Darnell back again. Do we have a mic?
I was gonna say, this one's kind of an important question, because I've noticed a lot of photographer podcasts don't talk about this, and I may have missed it on yours if you talked about it, so excuse me, but promotion. A lot of people never actually talk about their promotion tools, the way they promote to clients. We have a mentorship program at our agency, and that's one of the first things that we tell people about is promotion. And I always love hearing how different artists work in their promotion, like values and tastes. So I'd be curious to hear how you guys promote. I know how you promote, but I'd be curious to know how you promote.
Episode 15 just came out yesterday.
Oh, nice.
All on marketing. But
I think we do the same thing. We really put a lot of work into our newsletters.
Newsletter. Yeah. I mean, I think before, when people are at the office, you can make beautiful promos, but I haven't made a print promo in a very long time. So I think emailers are definitely the number one.
And also if I've done a bunch of work and recently that I'm really excited about, like after I shot two cookbooks back to back this year, and a lot of the imagery felt in line with like a certain kind of client, and I was really happy with the images. And so my agent and I put together a PDF targeted towards specific clients that we wanted, and we sent that, you know, we sent personal notes, like little things like that, which we don't do often, but every now and then there's a good opportunity to do it. Also, reaching out to people we haven't, that we may have been on jobs with, but haven't gotten, you know, sometimes we'll ask if they want to get coffee or anything like that, have a meeting, just anything to kind of remind people who you are. Because again, then there's like a right place, right time moment that can come from that.
Yeah. I mean, I think to that point, if there are specific clients that you really want, you can create things just for them.
Hi.
Ooh, hello.
Carolina. I'm a photographer, and I just wanted to thank you for starting this podcast. The cookbook episodes were coming out when I was starting my first cookbook project, and they were so affirming. I was like, yes, every single thing that you described, I was like, this is happening to me. Like, I'm so glad I'm not alone. So I really appreciate that. But my question was more in the commercial realm. What do you do when, or how do you like articulate, you have a shot list, you've prepared for the shot list, and then the client during the shoot is like, let's do this, and like, let's add on this, and they add more to the shot list that wasn't originally there. Like, how do you navigate honing that in and like reeling it back in?
You call your agent.
Yeah.
It's like, if what if you don't have an agent?
Yeah, if you don't have an agent, yeah.
Hopefully you have, do you have a producer?
Or do you have a contract?
Yes.
Okay. I think you should specify exactly how many shots are going in that contract, right? And then...
I think on set, I understand. If you don't have a producer and you don't have an agent, you're still trying to appease the client. So what I usually do is like, we can totally do this, assuming you can, right? Like shift... But like we might have to drop off a shot or trying to renegotiate with them. I think that's hard because you have to be the bad guy, but also trying to be the good guy. But I think on sets like that, I mean, I think today was like actually a good example. I didn't have a producer and like she wanted to change all these things. And I was like, sure. But like, as long as you're flexible, I can be flexible too. But you have to realize your shot list might not get done today. So I think it's just trying to make them feel happy, but also like adding in like, well, we only have 1 hour. Don't know that we can get 10 shots.
I feel like as early as you can manage expectations, the better the production will go. And that's why I think clarity before you even arrive on set in terms of what the client is going to leave with has to be spelled out in black and white. And sometimes you will have a little bit of room, I think, to squeeze in an extra shot and everybody wins, but better to underestimate and then pleasantly surprise than the opposite.
Yeah, and I think you can also just say, oh, we can get this extra shot. Let's have it as a nice to have at the end of the day if we have time.
Yeah,
and
nice.
You might have time, but you probably won't have time, but at least you made the effort.
Yeah. The nice to have shot list is awesome.
Oh, yeah. I love the nice to have.
I'm like, okay, I think that's great. Let's move this to a nice to have.
Please help us prioritize. Like, yes.
Another question.
Yes.
Ooh,
I'm so happy.
Hi, I'm Gala. I'm a photographer also. I have a random question, but does it ever happen to you where you might be shooting a picture and you hate it in the moment, but then you go home and you like it, or vice versa? Maybe you really like it and then you go home and see it and you hate it.
Yes, yeah. To both.
Yeah.
I think every yes to single both. Image.
Yeah. I think that happens all the time. I feel like some things just like grow on you and you're like, okay, I think if I like crop it this way, I can see how this like, oh yeah, I really like it. I think too, like other people will look at it and they're like, this is amazing. And I'm like, is it?
Yeah, you're like, what exactly do you like about it? So that like, I can fix it on that.
It
And then, I mean, I've had it happen on set where I'm working on something and I'm just like,
this does not look good. What do I do? And then I think I just have to take a little step away and either, like, I have kind of ongoing inspiration imagery that I'm just, like, constantly screenshotting on my phone. Like, sometimes I'll just do, like, a quick scroll. Like, maybe I just need just, like, something to spark just, like, anything. Sometimes I'll literally see a shadow from a modeling light, which is, like, for people that don't know, it's the light that models the set. It's the light that's not strobing when you're lighting something. And I'll literally see someone walk in front of it, and it'll cast a shadow that excites me. And I'm like, okay, we're going to make that. You know, just like little things. It's kind of just like stepping away and trying to not panic and find any source of inspiration to bring it back.
Sometimes I think there is that feeling. It's like that full body warmth when you know you've nailed it.
Yeah.
And it's like every cell in your body is like agreeing with the other cells. And I feel like maybe there's like one on each set that happens for me personally, maybe. And everything else is like, oh, this is terrible. They're firing me. I'm going home. Goodbye. I'm walking out the door. But yeah, I feel like that push and pull happens a lot. And when you see something with fresh eyes after the fact, there's a different interpretation than when you're like stuck in the weeds doing it.
Yeah. More questions.
Oh my God, I love all the questions.
I love questions.
I didn't even need to be here, actually.
Hi, I'm Monica also, photographer. And I was curious to hear your perspective on what the sort of posture a photographer should be holding on set as a leader, and how to really hold a set tight and kind of keep everyone feeling confident. I'm super curious.
Great question.
Never panic externally. Keep it all inside and smile. No. I think it's just staying positive even when things are changing. And, you know, there's like so many different ways you could answer something. Like, if something isn't working, you could just be like, oh God, it's not working. Or just be like, okay, we need a few more minutes to figure this out. I think, and then just not having any hint of worry or panic. If you're really struggling with something, you know, like, tell someone that could handle it, like a producer. You know, you don't have to announce it to the whole set. I think it's just kind of keeping an external level of calm. It's kind of, I feel like, our responsibility to do that, because it really does affect the whole mood on set. I've definitely had bad moments where I've gotten, like, I was having a bad day or I'm grumpy, and I felt like I could have, if I hadn't been grumpy, like, maybe people would have had more fun or whatever. And so I feel like once I noticed that sometimes I get into, like, moods of the clients being kind of hard to deal with, it's just kind of changing your perspective and choosing to stay positive instead of wallowing on the hardship of it.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with that. I think just trying to stay positive and, like, making sure you're being nice to your crew too, I think, is a big deal. I've definitely been on a set where the photographer was really mean. I was like, wow, people work for this guy. But yeah, I think just being...
Yeah, and I think it's also a small community, so word gets around. If there's a photographer that's not fun to work for, you'll probably hear about it. Yeah. Like, no one will want to assist them. Mm-hmm. So I think it's just being really respectful to everyone, because it'll come back around for sure.
Reputation definitely matters in this business, for sure.
Hi. I'm Natalie. I'm a food stylist. And as you know, I assist, and I've been assisting for quite some time. And I guess my advice, or my question, would be, as I'm trying to break out on my own and taking on my own clients, what advice would you give someone in my position, other photographers, and maybe to your former self, of how to take that leap of faith, what the best course of action is? I listened to your episode on agents, and I was like, this is brilliant. I need to, like, get myself out there, promoting myself to agents. Would you suggest that avenue? Would you suggest going after producers, clients directly, you know, other people in the industry? I guess for me as a food stylist, like reaching out to photographers as well matters hugely. So just curious what your advice would
be. And I've tested with you.
I know. And like pushing out of the nest. Marion's going to kill me for saying that, but like, you know, get jumping out of the cozy assistant, you know, realm and getting out on your own.
I mean, I think that like the testing like you've been doing is definitely key. I think also, I know Marion loves you and promotes you herself. And so it's, I think it's kind of having the faith that if you work for someone that you really admire, they also understand that you are going to want to lead on your own. And I think letting them know, they'll be able to start passing stuff to you as well. So I think it's like not being afraid of being like, I'm starting to, yeah.
I think too, I think depending on if you are getting any inquiries now, I'm sure you're getting a decent assistant rate. So I think there's a certain point you have to make the decision to say no to assisting and take on some of those jobs that are smaller, but will help build your portfolio. Because at the end of the day, we know you're great because you work with the queen. but we can't, if you don't have any work to show for that, it's harder for people to hire you for that. So I think in any kind of assisting, like prop styling, food styling, photo assisting, like there's a point where you have to make that decision to stop assisting so that you can do maybe a job that's not going to pay you as well as that assisting job, if what you want to pursue is lead.
And also just to add to that, I think there's only so much that, as an assistant, there's only so much that you can learn on set. Like, you have great set experience, but being on set all the time, you don't get that, like, business side of it. And the only way to learn that is by doing. And that means, like, making time to have those experiences.
Does anyone else have a question?
Darnell has one more.
Darnell has a question.
Sorry. Well, I like asking questions because I'm inquisitive, but I feel like a lot of artists have trouble editing their work, and I think a lot of it stems from their emotional attachment to the works. A lot of people have had pretty bad experiences on set and have missed out on amazing work they could have been showing or could have won them jobs. How do you guys kind of like handle that when you're doing your editing? Like, do you have an emotional attachment to the work, or do you have more of an actual technical or visual attachment to the work?
I kind of stopped having an overly emotional attachment to my work. I feel like I kind of got to a point where either like I was busy enough or I just had other things that I was working on. It's just like there's only so much time you can dedicate to something, and so I make it look the way that makes me happy, and I try not to overthink it, and then I just try to move on.
Do you mean to just like photo editing in general, or also editing like your body of work?
Photo editing in general, like just actually like when you have to make a portfolio, when you have to make a presentation for someone.
Oh my God, I overanalyze it then like crazy.
I think when you have to make a presentation of, and it's like an edit of the body of work you have, that's always really hard, I think, because we are very emotionally tied to certain things, but that might not necessarily be what will help sell you. So having an agent is great to help you kind of edit that. And then, I mean, I think there's people you could hire who could do
that.
Ask a friend.
We literally will send each other pages all the time. Do you like page 1, 2, or 3?
Yeah.
You can only pick one.
This page with this photo or this photo. Yeah.
Ask Ren and Jen. Everybody's going to email you from here on out for your opinion, expert opinion.
I think having friends that you can talk to about this is like, I don't know what I would do without Ren.
Yeah. I think our time is up, has been up. Thank you, Monica, for exceeding our allotted hour.
Everyone, you guys are good. I felt like the Q&A session was really, really good. So
no, thank you guys so much for participating. I really appreciate that. Well, thank you guys for coming. This was amazing to be a part of, and thank you both for sharing your experiences so honestly with everyone here and beyond. And yeah, can't wait to continue the conversation.
Thank you so much. Thanks,
thank
everyone.
You. Thank you, guys.
Bye.
If you have any comments, questions, or ideas on future episodes, email us at photodump.club@gmail.com.
Photodump was created by Ren Fuller and Jennifer Chong. Thank you to Sam Fuller for our cover art and overall tech support. Our music was created by Daniel Smith.
You can find me on Instagram at jchongstudio.
And me at Ren_Fuller.
Thanks for listening.